Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 214 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. We will have a Supreme Court update for you. We will talk about Pauly Saint-Sauvier spreading more disinformation while they accuse everyone else of spreading disinformation. You know, it feels like they do this on a biweekly basis. Anyway, pretty crazy. The liberals say that they banned no 22s and no shotguns in all of these bans. But at the same time, guess what the number one firearm registered for the buyback was? Anyway, we'll tell you about that. Quebec launched a new program to randomly call the spouses of licensed gun owners to see if those spouses feel safe in the home with them. Kind of interesting. On the other hand, the Gunny Girls documentary, right? All about female gun owners, comes to YouTube on July the 26th. Make sure that you check that out and share it with everybody. As well, this is the last episode of our regular season. We're moving into the summer schedule, so we'll tell you all that. So anyway, all that and more of the CCFR Radio Podcast starts right now. Thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR Podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. In Canada, firearm owners understand the importance of safe, effective self-defense options. That's why we're proud to have Byrna as a sponsor. Byrna's less lethal launchers are designed to help protect you and your family without taking a life. Byrna offers peace of mind and a practical layer of personal security for Canadians who value safety. Learn more at byrna.ca/CCFR. That's byrna.ca/CCFR. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio Podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. All right, we are back and via the internet, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Wilson!
That was a good one.
Was it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
Oh, man.
Cool. Well, we have a ton of stuff to go through. Actually, it's quite a big list. We even left some stuff off the list this time around, oddly enough.
Yeah.
So we might as well get started. We've got a little bit of frustrating stuff as usual, because this is about gun owners and what the government's trying to do to everybody. But we also have some really fun stuff too. So I'm excited.
Okay. Let's All right. get rolling.
First thing I'm going to handle, which is a Supreme Court update. Not that much to update. There's another couple of weeks left for all our interveners to pile in. And we've had some really great ones, which is fantastic. The other thing is you posted a story on ccfr.ca that contains our memorandum of argument, otherwise known as the factum, and our motion record. So people can go there and check that out, correct?
Yes, that's right. The PDF is there. You can download it. You can just read it on the screen, whatever you want. But we wanted to share it with people because it's not our case. It's yours. If you support the CCFR, this is your case.
Excellent. All right. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that we want to get out of the way is Canada's National Firearms Association, otherwise known as the NFA, had their president pass away last week, Rick Eggersich. So we just wanted to make mention of that and say that that Rick definitely cared about Canadians preserving their freedoms, hard-fought freedoms, and he took action, which is very similar to what I said on my social media account as well.
Yeah, our thoughts go out to his family, his friends, and the whole crew over at the NFA.
Yeah, so sorry to hear that, and our condolences. Okay, yeah. Next thing. Pauly Saint-Sauvier is at it again.
No.
And they just love distorting the argument. So what they did was they took this. This is actually some pretty old information that's, I think, just got recycled, if mm-hmm. I understand it correctly. But the RCMP have some numbers about crime guns And again, it depends how you define crime guns, because that can be very misleading as well. Crime guns being overwhelmingly domestically sourced. So anyway, you've got some figures about that. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, that's right. So they came out with this report from the RCMP. Now, remember, this only applies to RCMP-traced crime guns. And of the guns that they traced, 71% of them were domestically sourced. So Polly was like, see, it's those pesky gun owners. But if you go back and actually dig into it, data published by StatsCan shows that 92% of crime guns are never actually recovered. So this number leaves only 8% of crime guns recovered. Of those 8% of crime guns, Public Safety Canada states that less than 20% are even sent for tracing. And I actually had an RCMP friend reach out and say it's more like 16%. But we'll go with the 20%. So that's 20% of the 8% of crime guns, if you're following me here. And that works out to about 1.6% of all crime guns sent for tracing. So 71% domestically sourced in Canada, of that 1.6% is about 1.1% of all crime guns are domestically sourced, which sounds about right. And very different from the way Polly put it out. Now, 67% of that 1.1% also includes ghost guns, like 3D printed guns, which are illegal, not part of our community. Also includes toy guns, replicas, and airsoft. And none of this data includes Canada's most populous provinces, Ontario and Quebec, who do their own tracing and do not use the RCMP at all. So yeah, talk about cherry picking like a stat and putting it out there as fact. It was absolutely ridiculous. And they got community noted for it. And well-deserved.
So it's really important to point out that data, as far as trying to figure out where crime guns are coming from, is totally worthless. That is
worthless
garbage data, especially when the RCMP, and I'm going to pin some of it on them, are so desperate to support the government in their ridiculous assault on only licensed gun owners, leaving criminals basically alone. They're so desperate that they would include toy guns and replicas in those numbers. Yeah. It's just amazing. Yeah. And I do want to make one other point here too. If you really have to watch the language, because this is actually really important, critically important. A while back, Bloomberg did this crazy, like years long researched piece on crime guns in Canada. And it was like, they're overwhelming domestically sourced. And here's where the language gets you. They say of firearms traced. Now, I did a whole thing about this, and I think it might be in that video. I think we mentioned it last time, C21 for Senators. I mentioned this exact story from Bloomberg. And what they did was they only count with the firearms that are traced, meaning, and I have this on good authority, they look at these guns, overwhelmingly the crime guns that are handguns, come from the United States. And how do they know without tracing them? Because they're prohibs. The barrels are too short. In the United States, probably the majority of handguns have barrels under 4 1/8 inches, right? Lots of people carry small pistols there. So all these pistols come over across the border. The police look, they're like, it's got a 3 3/4 inch barrel. It's a prohib. Didn't come from Canada. They don't have to trace it. They know exactly where it came from. So those don't appear in the numbers. They're only looking at the ones that have barrels over 4 1/8 inches or firearms that have obliterated serial numbers or whatever, or a specific crime. They choose the ones specifically to trace. So is that representative of the total number of crime guns? Absolutely not, man. It just isn't. So, you know, Polly Sisouvien has had this problem forever of misleading people whilst the entire time accusing everyone else of misleading people. It's really bad. People wonder, it's like, wow, why are you so hard on them? It's like, if you have to lie to support your argument, you probably are wrong.
Yeah. I mean, this is a typical example of anti-gun lobby disinformation.
Yeah. Like, literal disinformation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Manipulating people. So anyway, what a train wreck, man. Look,
if the goal here is, and I think all Canadians want safer communities, we want less crime guns, we want less smuggled guns. That's the whole point. Like, if we shared that goal with them, you know, we all want good data, but they just see this small little, you know, sliver of a opportunity to turn this into a narrative that supports their agenda, and they run with it, you know, to the detriment of public safety and all Canadians. So, yeah, it's just such a waste of time.
And it's a long way from the actual reality. And then, of course, they go to Twitter and they say, gun lobby talking points about, you know, crime guns being sourced outside of the country is blown out of the water or something so ridiculous. And I'm like, they get blown out of the water. They get stinking community noted because they're spreading misinformation.
Yeah. And community noted, for those who don't know, is a fact checking service within Twitter. So within X. So
yeah,
they got totally community noted on that. So did a bunch of media who also parroted the same exact misinformation. And anyways, I like I said, this is a detriment to having a real conversation about the source of violence and crime guns in our streets, and it's not helpful.
Yeah. Well, and to support the point that you just made, this is the reason. It's not the gun lobby or gun owners or anyone like that that is the reason why we can't have a mature, honest, fact-based, reasonable conversation about civilian legal firearm ownership and its relationship or lack thereof to violent crime in Canada involving firearms. It's not because of us that we can't have this proper adult conversation about this. It is because of the anti-gun groups and the government itself spreading misinformation. We're going to talk a little bit more about some ridiculous, completely outrageous government misinformation being spread by the usual suspects in a minute. But let's move on. There was a shooting in Montreal where a police officer and a civilian died and another police officer was wounded a day before yesterday.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the time of recording here, we don't have a lot of information. It's pretty fresh. But an Alberta man traveled to Montreal. He committed this attack. There was some shooting out of a hotel window, broken glass, and that's what somebody saw that and called the police. We've got an officer dead. We've got a civilian dead. The perpetrator is dead and one officer in stable but serious condition in hospital. Again, there's not a whole lot of information. There was a manifesto that has been published now on the internet. A lot of stuff about communism. I'm not going to get into that whole thing. People can go and read it for themselves. But, you know, normally when something like this happens, the mature thing to do, the responsible thing to do, is wait for information before jumping to conclusions. And everybody from every side of the debate has been using this tragedy for them, for their own personal purposes. And I think that's just an awful thing. But today, Montreal Mayor Soroya Martinez Ferrada got in front of the cameras and said that this is a time for more gun control. Meanwhile, police investigation has, I don't even know if it's begun, let alone completed. They have not released any information about the firearm or how it was acquired or anything like that, not knowing if that would have even prevented the situation. She's using this tragedy to call for more of it. And Tristan Peliquin, our friend, our media friend, already wrote a story. It appears from the videos and pictures that the perpetrator used an SKS to carry out this crime. And of course, he's talking about how, you know, they've long wanted to get that one banned. So there's no hesitation to use or flex this tragedy to support their narrative. And yeah, again, just awful people.
Yeah, they just want to leverage every bit of pain and suffering for their own agenda, whether or not, because if you think about it, the question is, okay, if the SKS was banned, would this have happened? Right? And would people have been hurt? Because two people were killed, one person was injured. That could have easily been done with a motor vehicle, which we've seen time and time again in Canada. And again, whenever it happens, nobody, even their minds don't even go to, oh, we need to increase regulations on cars or ban cars. I don't like saying ban cars because it's an extreme example, but it is the extreme action they've taken against guns, right? But when it comes to, everyone wants to run around and own what these people did and use it for their own purposes. And in this case, oh, he was a misogynist and it was incel and whatever. But in the manifesto, he's actually quoting the Communist Manifesto. So I think basically when I look at this, and I'm no expert, right? But I see all these different reasons why he's angry. I just see mental illness and a very lost individual, a lost individual who could have committed violence, probably at a far larger scale had he used some other method. So anyway, it's a tragedy all the way around. Nobody wants to see any of this stuff. People want to stop this kind of thing. But I think everyone, again, in this conversation, just like the others, you have to be honest. We have to be honest about, like, well, why are people committing violence, whether it's with motor vehicles or guns or hands or knives or whatever, right? Look at the James Cree Nation stabbings, right? 11 people. Mm-hmm. And another, what, 15 or something injured? 11 people died and 15 or something crazy, you know? So this kind of violence can be done in a variety of different ways. And again, to your point, just wait a few days. You know what? Maybe there's going to be information that will help your agenda. Tristan Pangolin and Polly Saint-Sylvain and some crazy mayor of Montreal. Like, you know, don't worry. You might have something you can use later, but why don't you just wait? See, you know, what the landscape looks like. Get the proper information before you run out there and start leveraging it. It's just that we actually took the same stance during the Nova Scotia shootings, where we just kept quiet about it. And all the other groups, the docs, if you remember, they ran out right away with an open letter. What, like, it's pretty bad behavior, man.
It is pretty bad behavior. And I mean, at the same time, you know, you've got, this is a very, very complex situation, even with how little we know about it. You know, you've got this crazy manifesto, all these issues with that. You've got a cop fighting for her life in hospital. You've got the family and friends and colleagues of a slain officer. There's a lot of delicate, sensitive things going on. And to just run out and say, hey, how can I leverage this to help me gain some points for my talking points is just, it's pretty gross.
Yeah, so. These are not good people.
No.
You know, and I've said that before. Like, I don't go out of my way to villainize them like they villainize us, but these are not good people. So anyways, terrible, terrible thing to have happened. All right. Yeah. Another story. There's an interesting situation, right from the original gun ban back on May 1st, 2020, where the government decided they were going to ban all these guns as a result of what happened in Nova Scotia, which of course, as I've said many times, I had the evidence before the public did as part of the Mass Casualty Commission inquiry. And there was not a single firearm used in the commission of that offense that was sourced in Canada. They were all smuggled from the United States and or the handgun that was taken off of Constable Heidi Stevens, if I remember. Mm-hmm. Stevens. That's where the guns came from. So anyways, the whole time, the Liberal government just lied to people. They kept lying while accusing other people of lying. And they said, no, there's no, these are all weapons of war designed for soldiers to kill other soldiers. There's no 22s, hogwash. This is gun lobby misinformation to scare hunters. There's no 22s. There's no shotguns banned. There's no 12-gauge shotguns banned. And so I guess Andrew Lawton came out with a list, and there's all these guns that have been turned in under this program. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, that's right. So Andrew Lawton, a Conservative MP from the London area, put in an opposition paper question, an OPQ. And out of the firearms that were declared in the assault style firearm buyback program, a compensation program, the number one most declared gun was a GSG 16, which is a 22, over 5,000 of them, 18% of the overall total guns declared. Mossberg 715T Tactical 22 and the GSG 15, two other 22 caliber rifles, were also in the top 10 declared guns. And in fact, AR-15s accounted for less than 40% of all the firearms claimed. And you think it would be way more than that.
Because it registered.
So, yes, exactly. And some people are saying, you know, well, I have no choice. They know I've got it. And it accounted for less than 40%. So, you know, I know there was a press conference not long ago where somebody said, oh, these are not pop can guns or gopher guns, you know, but there isn't an army in the world that would use a 22 caliber rimfire rifle for a weapon of war. You know, it's just absolutely ludicrous. So yeah, just crazy.
Well, if you remember, one of the biggest offenders, and it was basically all the public safety ministers that I can remember were just lying the entire time. But probably no one, I mean, Marco Mendocino was just a moron as a human.
Yeah.
Like he was just more
of a dum-dum.
Yeah, he was just a dum-dum floating around. And when it comes to the Minister of Public Safety, that portfolio has been so discredited. It's in such disarray that they throw people who have no political future in there just to take the spears and the arrows, and then they just toss them aside later, like Marco Mendocino or Gary Ananda Sangari. Like they just throw guys that are just have no future, you know, political potential. And there's like, you know what? You'll get tarred and feathered. We'll get rid of you. And we get that reset. Just like when Trudeau resigned and they just handpicked and dropped Carney in there. Right. So
yeah.
Anyways, I think the best, the worst liar of all of them was Bill Blair. And in fact, when we first got that list back in May 2020, we're like, oh, there's 22s on this. There's bolt action rifles. There's shotguns. And they're like, no. And we're like, oh, there's hunting rifles. They're like, nope, no hunting rifles, no 22s, no shotguns. In fact, I've got a clip. Check this out if you remember it.
Chair, how many shotguns are now on that banned list?
The Honorable Minister.
Yeah, this is a bit of confusion that was put out by the gun lobby to frighten hunters. And in fact, we did not prohibit any shotguns.
Again, Madam Speaker, it's absolutely incorrect. We have not banned any 22 rifles. The weapons that we banned are all consistently weapons of military design.
And it's very clear, and the Canadian Firearms Program has made it explicitly clear, that 10 and 12 gauge shotguns are not included in this prohibition. And so all people that were concerned about that need not be concerned.
No, you'll notice on the list the weapons that we are banning. First of all of them have in their origins and in design military use. But they are all semi-automatic. They are all capable of rapid sustained fire, not automatic fire, but rapid sustained fire. They're all capable of taking large capacity magazines, and they all use center fire ammunition, not 22 rim fire ammunition, but ammunition either 223 NATO rounds or higher capacity of rounds. And so those are the weapons that have made this list of prohibited weapons. They are not designed and used for hunting, and they're not designed and used for sport shooting.
Literally not a thing he said there was true. What do you mean no shotguns? You and I went through the list. Now, keep in mind, this is just the list of stuff that was declared, not the stuff that was banned. And just looking at it for 5 minutes, we found the Daria Arms Mark 10 and 12 and Gen 2 as well. The Adler Arms J210, the Hunt Group FD12, the Canuck Spectre, the Escort Raider, the Lever Arms K12, the Ranger Bullpup, Charles Daly, NFS. I could go on and on. These are all 12-gauge shotguns. So when he says there's no shotguns, no rimfire, like this is a flat-out lie.
What about 22s? There's a bunch of 22s. And we just pulled these like out of the list just by scrolling down the list for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And again, this is just the list of declared stuff, not the banned stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, there's the ISSC 22, the GSG 16, the GSG 15, the Mossberg 715T Duck Commander, the MP40, the Chris Vector 22, the Mossberg 702 Plinkster Tactical, the TNW ASR 22, all kinds of 22s. So yeah, almost 20% of guns banned were 22s. So yeah, it's just insane to me. Like these people just flat out lie to us, lie to Canadians, and then accuse us of gun lobby disinformation.
Yeah. They point at us and say, no, they're lying while they're lying themselves. And don't think that Bill Blair doesn't know. Like Bill Blair is anyway, you know how I feel about Bill Blair, but I don't like it when people are living off tax money and then they lie to the people who are paying their paychecks, like just absolutely lie while they use government resources to villainize citizens that are just saying, hey, why can't we just be honest about this thing? I think we shouldn't be lying to each other. And they're like, okay, we're gonna run campaigns to destroy Rod or Tracy or the CCFR or CCFR members. Like it's just that, that's a bad thing to do. I don't know. It's funny. Like they're all used to it. for some reason.
Yeah, they are used to it. And it's almost like, you know, and then when we were like, hey, that's not fair. This isn't true. You know, you're attacking liberals. You're attacking victims. Yeah. You know, it's like, I don't know, man, like talk about an unfair fight, right?
Yeah, it's people. People are losing their marbles these days. Yeah, and I guess we're seeing some of the results of it too, right? So,
yeah.
Okay, let's flip over to something a little bit lighter, a little bit more fun. The Gunny Girls documentary is going to be going on to YouTube this Friday. So June 26th, it'll be on YouTube. We'll spread it around all of our social media platforms. Make sure that you share all the links so that everybody can see this little documentary. It's kind of, it's fun to watch and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I really like it. It's important to me. It means a lot to me, actually, that you did this project, because it sort of tells the story of how the women's program got put together, how this fundraiser, and it's just a simple fundraiser that got us off the ground and helps us fund Ladies Range Days, but how it sort of became, you know, with the backlash on Twitter, mostly by, you know, left-leaning men, how it sort of became controversial when it shouldn't have been. And you get to hear from the girls, and I just love them all so much. And yeah, I can't wait to hear everyone's opinion about what they thought about it.
Well, left-leaning women too. It's amazing. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because it's left-leaning individuals. It's always, you know, we've talked about this before, right? But it's just always ironic to me. It's like their women have agency. They can do whatever they want, blah, blah, blah. Nobody tells them what to do. And then if you're like, okay, we're going to have a calendar so we can have Ladies Range Days and show people why, you know, people own guns and it's a healthy part of society. It's like, oh my God, the trailer park must have been empty that day. Like just the most horrible things to women they never met. It's just, yeah. I mean, these are not our society's good people. You know,
no, so they're all for women's empowerment, but only a certain type of woman, not these women.
As long as their opinions conform to what they think is the right thing. Just very, it's an interesting illness. All right. Now, I did an interview with CTV News a few weeks ago, and I don't think we talked about this in the last podcast, but apparently, and I'll see if I'm saying this correctly, the Sûreté du Québec, so the provincial police in Quebec, have a new program where they're calling up at random licensed gun owners, partners or spouses to see if they feel safe with a gun owner in the home.
This is absolutely insane to me. So Canada already has yellow and red flag laws. Police already have the power to suspend your license, confiscate your guns, issue protective orders. The law allows for them to remove firearms before violence occurs. Why are police investigating people who've done nothing wrong by cold calling their spouses? You know, is there nothing else that they can be doing? And I say this with the greatest of intent, because I care about intimate partner violence. And, you know, I'm not blind to it either in previous experiences in my life. But to sort of go out there, this leaves it ripe to misuse, right? And what does it say about what you think about gun owners when you have police who are already over, you know, they're stretched thin, they're overburdened, and you have them spending their time cold calling gun owners' wives to see if they feel safe.
It's an interesting approach. And I would ask you this. I wonder if they would be comfortable choosing any other demographic that you'd find in Canada and calling the spouses of those people just to make sure that they're safe and they're not being abused and whatever, right? It would be the most outrageous thing. Everyone would be losing their minds. But again,
of course they would.
If you're licensed gun owners to get a criminal background check every 24 hours and have had references and sign off from the exact spouses that they're calling or the conjugal partners that they're, you know, that they would possibly be calling, you know, for some reason it's like, no, we have to hyper focus on these people.
Well, and I know the data shows that the number one weapon used against women in intimate partner violence is hands, right?
Yeah.
But we're not checking up on those wives, right? So,
well,
no,
or knives or blunt instruments. And again, like you and I have been at this a long time, right? Yes. And if you remember, if you are ever curious about how often firearms are used in domestic or family violence, feel free to go straight over to StatCan. They have a report that they issue every year. The number of calls received overall throughout the entire country that involve a firearm present, not used in the offense, but present, is less than 1%.
Right.
And you'll never hear that on the news. You'll never hear that from the government. Less than 1%. They round up to 1% because they don't do decimals in that chart. So,
well, and to me, it just makes it seem like they just are implying that gun owners must obviously beat their wives, right? Like,
well, they must be more violent than the general population.
Yeah, which is demonstrably untrue.
Yeah, you're correct. So anyway, now some other good news.
Yes.
So there's been a story about the PAL increases despite everything going on and all the, you know, the persecution of gun owners, of people that would be so bold as to get a firearms license, our numbers continue to climb.
Yeah, this data comes right from the RCMP Commissioner of Firearms report for 2025. And it says that there are 2,458,677 Canadians holding a PAL as of December 31st, 2025. And of course, that number continues to grow. So that's an increase of nearly 47,000 license holders from the previous year. Every single province and territory saw growth, which is interesting. And the largest number of new license holders is Ontario, with 15,221, followed by Alberta and British Columbia, both adding more than 10,000 new gun owners. And Quebec surpassed 500,000 gun owners for the first time in nearly two decades. The interest in our PALs still continues to grow. And this is really neat. So we've had 1.9% annual growth in PAL holders, but restricted PAL holders rose by 2.5% to 794,768. So it's outpacing the growth of regular PALs. And that's neat because there's a lot less opportunities for them to actually even acquire a restricted, but they're still getting that license. So yeah, those are really good numbers for our community. We're a big, big sector of the public.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And one of the sort of data points that I throw around all the time is that there are more Canadians licensed in Canada to own handguns than play organized hockey. So registered hockey players, so that play league hockey or whatever, right, is somewhere around 500,000 to 550,000 Canadians. And of course, you're like, oh, hockey is as Canadian as it gets. And it's like, well, actually, there's 40% more handgun licensees in Canada. Not all of them own handguns, obviously, but people that are licensed to own handguns go out of their way and jump through all the hoops and meet all the requirements and are issued a license to own handguns. Then play organized hockey. But again, you'll never see that on mainstream media. Like, you'll never see it. So
no, they never talk about it.
Yeah. And just kind of just throwing this out there, if anybody's interested, go to CBC News, go into the search bar, type in the most bizarre thing you can think of, right? Like, I don't know, soapbox car racing or something, just come up with something really bizarre and you can use your own imagination. I put some pretty crazy things in there and I found like 10, 15, 40, 80 stories about something that probably involves 500 people across the country. Put in trap shooting and see how many, put in IPSC and see how many stories you find.
Yeah.
And it's like literally four, one, you know, six, like it's nothing. They completely ignore, put in hockey and see how many hits you get.
Oh.
Put in league hockey or rep hockey and see how many you get, right? It's just, it's very interesting. And of course, the CBC, it's the mirror that reflects back to us what it is to be Canadian, right? Apparently.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that sport shooting and hunting is Canada's sport, right?
Yeah, it's bigger than hockey.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, don't fall into the right-wing conspiracy that CBC is just a social engineering hub or a propaganda network for the Liberal Party of Canada, because that's simply not true. It's demonstrably false. Okay, it's not demonstrably false, but it doesn't matter if it's true. It's still a fact.
Yeah,
it's not. And
I'm on the defund camp. So yeah.
All right. One announcement. Our AGM speeches, I've been struggling to get those done. I've been dealing with interveners on our court case. I've been dealing with all kinds. I have a pile of work that I'm trying to make my way through. We're getting close to, getting close to halfway through summer. I'm trying to take a few days off here and there. The AGM speeches are coming. One of the things we're going to talk about next is we're going to our summer schedule as far as the podcast is concerned. So that means we're only going to be doing a podcast once a month. Well, this is a good opportunity to shoot out some of those AGM speeches as content. So just look for those in the next couple of weeks. And basically, it's really going to be two of them. It's going to be my conversation with Blaine Bevan, the current commissioner of the Saskatchewan Firearms Office, and Bob Freeburg, the former commissioner, as well as your conversation with Randall Arsenault. So those two things are coming out. Sorry, they're a little bit late, but they're going to be interesting conversations to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I owed them a lot sooner. It's my fault specifically and personally, but I'm going to get them done. And I think
there's been a few things going on around here. So yeah, that happens.
I think the benefit to this is I'm going to edit them. So I'm going to pull out the dead space and everything so that it'll be really efficient watching for everyone.
Okay.
So as I mentioned, we're going to the summer schedule. So just so everyone knows, the next podcast will be on or about July the 30th.
Okay.
And the podcast after that will be on or about August the 27th. Now, the ones that are coming up in our new season in September, I haven't scheduled those yet, but that's what we're going to have during the summer. And my last comment will be this, is make sure that you have your eyes peeled for maybe a special announcement video coming soon.
That's very mysterious, Mr. Giltaga.
It is mysterious. That's me
not
ruining our own plans by talking about things too early and not promising something that might get pushed off a week or two. But yeah, there could be something really important, very pivotal coming. Who knows?
Okay. Very exciting. I like it.
Yeah. Anything else before we go for the summer? I'm not going to do an outro, by the way. This is it for the podcast. Anything else?
Yeah, I just want to tell everyone just to get out there, try and turn your phone off once in a while, get out there, go to the range, spend some time with family, get out in the sun, and we'll keep fighting.
That sounds great. And, as that announcement maybe pops out in the next week or two, you'll see how the CCFR continues to fight. Even when we sort of have a slight upper hand at the moment, we're still pushing. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very exciting. All right.
Awesome.
I guess that's it. We've done, we've got everything done.
Okay.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you for the update, and we will see you at the end of July.
All right. We'll see you then.
All right. I know I said I wasn't going to do an outro, but I made a mistake and gave you guys some wrong dates for our summer schedule. So I had to put these in here. So I had given you the dates. If you guys remember, we do the podcast and the television show, our biweekly television show on WOW TV. At the same time, I just do all the different segments and I put them all together. And so the TV show lags the podcast by a week. So if you watch the TV show only, I know you watch the podcast because you're watching this, then you're getting all that news a week late. So our next episode for the podcast is on or about July the 23rd, not the 30th. And the one after that is August the 20th. Not the 27th. Anyway, I just thought I would mention that. Other than that, don't forget, there will be a special video popping up here in the next couple of weeks for something else, some more pressure that we're putting on the federal government. And the federal government have no clue what's coming their way. So, the CCFR never stops fighting. And I think everyone's going to be impressed with what we're coming out with next. So keep your eyes peeled. Also keep your eyes peeled for, as I said, the AGM speeches. There's a couple of really great ones that I'm going to put out, and that's some extra content to keep you going. Anyway, and don't forget the Gunny Girls documentary. Make sure you share that around so other people can see it. I'm pretty proud of it. It's a pretty cool little project. Anyway, thanks everyone for watching and listening. Really appreciate it. Share the podcast. Have a great summer. Take care, and we will see you soon.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.